The divorce rates in the church are, in my opinion, astronomical, but it takes two to tango. And a lot of times we are left hanging by the devastation of divorce. Today we're going to interview Dale Brown, who after 32 years of marriage went through a divorce and wrote a book about finding healing after divorce. Today, if you are a man struggling and suffering through divorce, you're going to find some practical tools and daily work that will help you to find healing for your masculine soul.
It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who was actually in the arena, whose face is marked by dust and sweat and blood.
Welcome to the Men in the Arena podcast, sponsored by Mountain Tough Fitness Lab, where we interview specialists in the realm of manhood. Each of our guests is an expert in their chosen field or cause as it relates to men. Our conviction is to call you into the arena of manhood, call you out of the faceless, nameless bleachers, and call you up to be the best version of you. Because when a man gets it, everyone wins. Enjoy today's episode.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 27, Paul says, I discipline my body and make it my slave. You know, we often forget, guys, that God has called us to steward the bodies he gave us so that we'll be ready, healthy, and spiritually dangerous to fight the good fight, whether it's working at your job, serving your God, protecting your bride, or being a great dad to your kids. That's why we're so excited to partner with Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. Mountain Tough Fitness Lab is run by Christian men who are passionate about training you to be your best version and to stay dangerous and ready for God. Join me on my journey by going to mountaintough.com. That's MTNTOUGH and getting your free 6-week trial when you type in the code ARENA30. You won't be disappointed. Stay dangerous. What type of dad are you? Guys, in my 35 years of ministry, I've noticed that guys basically fall into two categories. And in those categories, there are four types of dad or four phases that you pass through as a dad. We just dropped an amazing quiz to help you discover what type of dad you are. Find out what type of father you are and get our custom resources fit to meet the needs and the questions you are asking. Head on over to menarena.org. Join 20,000 men from around the world and find out the type of dad you are. Men in the Arena Army, we salute you. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Men in the Arena podcast, guiding you to your best version in the stress bubble of life and beyond. Welcome to Spotify's number one podcast for Christian men. But before we jump into our interview today, I want to tell you about a cool hero story that came in. Remember guys, hero stories are actually stories of transformation that you've experienced, or if you're one of our women listeners, the man in your life experienced through the ministries of Men in the Arena. This is hero story number 18. Our goal is to have one hero story for every day of the week this year. And this one comes from a man named Jim, and he writes this. It's long, but it's really worth it. He says this: I come from a divorced family. My dad left when I was 5, and it wrecked me. He never engaged or helped me, so mom worked countless jobs to support us. We lost our house and moved around renting, so I grew up a very angry and embarrassed young man. I spent my life filling my soul with everything in this world, everything but God. I have 3 kids, so I'm definitely in the stress bubble, but I didn't handle it well. I withdrew, climbed the ladder, and worked too much. I became indifferent and bored. I used crutches and excuses and everything but Jesus to get me through. In October of this year, which is just about 5 months ago, I was caught and was kicked out of the house due to my alcohol and sex addictions. I was at the bottom of my life, but I didn't give up, and I crawled on my hands and knees, and I repented. By his grace, my life and my marriage and my relationship with kids has been restored. It is the best it has ever been after all that I did. He truly can turn your mess into your message. I love how he quotes one of my messages there. That was awesome. During this time, a random search led me to your podcast. This was a godsend at just the right time. Every episode seems to speak directly to me personally. As a result, I'm back at home. My family is back in church. I've joined a small group of great men and have learned that I'm not alone. I serve in several ways and have become a positive influence at my workplace. I continue to work over the brokenness of my wife, he quotes a podcast again, to fix the ugliness in her, he quotes the another podcast, that I allowed to occur. I now joyfully try to outlove and outserve her. He quotes the podcast again. These are all different episodes he's quoting. So, Jim, I'm hearing this. I love this. He said, I just want to give back, so I canceled one of my secular subscriptions and gave the money to a better godly cause, yours. I was not ready for that when I read that, Jim. So thank you so much. What a great story of redemption. You know, God truly does want to turn your brokenness into a blessing, your mess into his message. So guys, thank you so much. And Jim, hit us up at info@menandarena.org with your physical address. We want to send you one of our Wife is Greater Than Kids bumper sticker and some swag to go with it. Hey guys, make sure you stay tuned to the end of this episode as we unveil one of our 101 man laws that you can find in my free online book, Man Laws, 101 Ways to Get Your Man Card Revoked and Rules to Live By. Today, I want to introduce to you my guest and friend, Dale Brown. Dale lives in Texas with his wife of 5 years. After 32 years of marriage, Dale went through his own unchosen divorce. And in 2016, because of that divorce, he launched the Men's Divorce Recovery. MDR, as he calls it, helps men to find God and his plan for the second half of their lives. Dale has also authored the book, The Daily Survival Guide for Divorced Men, which is our subject on this episode. He's also the co-host of a podcast for men recovering from divorce, which he'll tell you about later. Hey, Dale, it's great to have you on the show today, man. Thanks so much for taking the time to be a part of us. How you doing?
I am great. Thank you for having me on, man. I feel passionate about this subject and about men in general and just want to help guys get through what will probably be the hardest time in their lives if they're going through divorce.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had breakfast with a top-level college athlete this morning who's got in a breakup, and he's about a month into it. And, man, his heart is broken. I mean, and I'm just thinking, you know, it's one thing dating a girl for 7 months. I mean, I get it. The heartbreak is there. But, man, being in a marriage for a decade or decades, I mean, it's so devastating. Unless you've gone through it as a child or as a husband or as a wife, you just don't understand it. So I want you to take some time and tell us your story. I know that you were married 32 years and you went through divorce that you did not want or choose or instigate. Mm-hmm. But can you unpack that story for us and tell us, you know, kind of what makes you tick?
Yeah, I've been a pastor my career, life, job, working, whatever, and things were good. Things were moving along. Pastor of a church north of Boston for about 12, 13 years, and things were moving along. And then at about period about 15 months, my life completely fell apart. I mean, I went from living in a beautiful home in the woods of New Hampshire, pastor of a church of about 500 people, well-respected, to literally 15 months later, living in a one-bedroom apartment in Kyle, Texas, south of Austin. I kept saying, how in the heck did I get here? Man, what happened? Because for myself, you know, as a pastor, you know how it is. You've been there. You have two wives. You have your wife at home, and then you have your church that you serve. And I kind of felt like almost every decision I made was based on trying to keep these wives happy, you know, what's going to please these wives. So this really was an unexpected turn of events. I won't go into all the church things, but the divorce happened after moving back to Austin to try to regroup after leaving the church in New England. And I'd just become pastor of a small church. I went from a church of 500 to about a church of 50 from the North Shore of Boston, literally to a cotton field. I mean, there was a tractor behind our house, the parsonage. So I said, you know, but I was like, God, you can do this. I'm with you here. And a big part of this story, though, is our work in Africa. We lived in Africa in the 1995-96 teaching and had maintained relationships with those pastors that we taught, a few of them in Kenya and Tanzania. So we had gone back to Africa in 2009, and that began a long relationship in rescuing kids and from Tanzania. My wife felt called to do that, and I was all there with her and helped her form the, you know, international 501c3 to make that happen. But all that to say is my wife had been gone to Africa in 2015 in the summer, about a month in there. I went on a teaching trip to Africa. We had a son at home, so we kind of had to split that up. I got home, well, let's say I got home from Houston, drove into Austin to my church parsonage on October 23rd, 2015. And my wife met me at the car, and I was thinking, well, this is unusual. She's not preparing a meal for me or welcoming me home or anything. It's pretty task-oriented relationship. But I'll never forget, anybody's been through divorce, you know, when this moment happens, we call it the date of separation. Then she told me that she'd left me while I was gone. She moved out of the church parsonage. The church didn't even know that. She had done that sort of at night. And I was shocked. I mean, life had pretty much taken some pretty downward turns up to this point, and this was just one more thing to add on to it. And I went into the parsonage that night exhausted from a 38 travel hour travel trip from Tanzania, and it's just such a shock. You just have to put it out of your mind. But the next morning, I really crashed because the implications of all this really came just came weighing down into my life. And you said you're talking to these guys who are struggling through, like this big burly college guy who's crushed, and I've seen big guys, fully bearded, flannel shirt, the whole thing, just weeping over a woman, so these women can bring us to our knees. And so this is what happened to me the next day. I really crashed, and I reached out to a friend of mine who's a psychologist in Boston, who'd come to Christ through our church up there, and he really caught me. He caught me in that moment. And kind of talked me off the ledge, got me into a touch with some people. And then subsequently, I talked to my older sister and then a counselor here in Austin. But those three people really formed a foundation, sort of a safety net to keep me from just wigging out completely. I wasn't thinking of suicide at that point, but as this kind of unwound, that was on the table at some point. I'm a shooter, I have guns, I have access with me all the time. And you're just like, oh, I could do this. So I definitely went through all those emotions and a lot of anger, a lot of heartbreak, just sadness, and in some ways relief too, because I would not say we were happily married. We kind of had a marriage that was superficially attached, but I won't go into all the details about her and what I thought of her, but we were not, I didn't miss her a lot, so there was actually a little bit of relief. But I also knew the implications for just staying in ministry and what that was going to look like. So it was a soul-crushing moment. There's no doubt about that. So I reached out and thought, I'm gonna find out what's on Amazon because you're a big reader. I'm a reader too. Pastors are, and I found a book by Kristen Armstrong, who was the wife of Lance Armstrong, and it was about a devotional for women going through divorce. And she's, Lance Armstrong's here in Austin, and she was here in Austin. And so I read that, and I thought, this book is great if you're a woman, but it is not great if you're a man. So, the male journey is so particular, is so unique. We are different, no matter what we're told these days. And so God just called me to write the book that I wish I'd had, and I hope that you never need. That is my tagline.
Yeah, for
And then
sure.
that's where the book, Daily Survival Guide for Divorced Men came out. So
Now, was it just because did your wife leave you because she just was done with you, or was there another person involved in the relationship? Was there another guy, or was she just done?
That is a great question. Not another guy involved. I'd say there's another continent involved, and that would be Africa. She had literally fallen in love with Africa and felt a strong call there. And I thought I kind of saw myself as retiring together in Africa, serving the kids there. But I'm not sure. I think what I missed was that the termination from the church impacted her deeply as well. I mean, it's just such a shock to serve hard and then to be rejected by just a few people that have the power to push you out of your love of your life for those 13 years pastoring the church in New England. So I don't know. I could go into details that would kind of explain some of the mistransference and projection and
Yeah.
oddities of that, but I don't think it'd be helpful
No, I mean
to the
it would be curious
conversation.
for me to know, but for our listeners, they want to know how to get help. You know what I mean? So
No,
now
I wasn't. I didn't have an affair. I was not drinking. It was unbiblical. There were no biblical reasons
it was
for
just a
divorce,
bad deal.
for her divorce. And when our ministry, what we find with men's divorce recovery is the guys we get are the ones who have wives have left them unexpectedly, unchosen. And this is why they're just a puddle on the bathroom floor, is because, if you're a guy and you say, hey, I'm going to have an affair, I'm choosing the divorce. But the guys we get are the ones who are just left in shock and that kind of thing. So,
You know, it's interesting. What I have found, I've been married 32 years this August.
congratulations,
Yeah,
brother.
and honestly, I'm just We had a horrible marriage early on. We hated each other. I mean, I was a pastor.
I read about that.
Yeah, I prayed, take her out. You know, I hated her. I married an angel, woke up and say, we joke about it, but we are just so, so close now. We still have our moments. You know, we are the Bickersons, but 32 years, but we had to fight for it. But we saw a lot of our friends from years about 1 to 7 divorce. And then there was this quiet season where we were all raising our children, virtually nobody divorced in our circle. And then all of a sudden, after 25, 30 years and the kids leave the home, we started seeing divorce, 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 divorce. Yep. It seemed to be, you think, hey, I'm out of the woods, man. This is a forever thing. And man, there's something about when the kids leave the home that can really devastate. I've had two different occasions where I had grown men, Christian men with godly women, calling me, one from Hawaii alone with his wife, and one at lunch saying, I am scared to death of my wife. I do not know who this person is. And so from your observation, let's talk first. We're going to spend 5 minutes on the guys who are married and the rest of the time on the guys who are not. What would you tell these guys that you have learned from these men like yourself that have been divorced after decades of marriage? What are some things that we can do to safeguard our marriage during that season when we're raising our kids in that stress bubble of life?
Well, I think I'm remarried. Kelly's my amazing wife. And both of us agree that it's sometimes very hard to raise kids and still like each other at the end of that run. The great thing is if you can continue with that great relationship together, well, then at the end of the run, when your kids are out, now you can really enjoy that season of life. So I really, you know, we definitely push guys to stay married. I mean, if you're thinking about getting divorce is hell. You may, in your mind, you justify it. You think, what I describe is you think of it, divorce is a little hill and staying married as this giant mountain. But what you find is divorce is that mountain. And staying married is not that hard. It's not. Just hug. Be nice. These are free. These are the free things. Pay attention to each other. Adore each other. And just lay the criticism off. I think that long-time marriages, you have to come to a conclusion about your spouse that she isn't going to suddenly change. The things that bothered you, they aren't getting better. And you just accept those things. And you commit to loving that person, fulfilling your vows. And that is what we completely, absolutely advocate for sure. Divorce is way harder and you will lose a lot. You will lose your money big time. There's no way to take a pie, cut it in half and have more pie. You have half the pie.
That is so true. So let me ask you this. What would you say to men, to marriages that have kids who are highly involved in extracurricular activities? And it just seems like the whole family revolves around that, the child or the children. What would you say about prioritizing your family relationships in that stress bubble?
Well, before I started, you mentioned the bumper sticker you guys have or something coming out. Is your wife is your first commitment. I mean, in paying attention to her and figuring out how you guys communicate, what the love language is, and adjusting to make that happen to where your relationship works is absolutely the first priority. I used to say, you know, my kids are going to be with me, but my wife for a little bit, they're going to be out, but my wife is with me forever. So you're going to be married a lot longer. You're going to be pastor of that church or in your job, whatever. You just have to adore that other person, accept those faults for what they are. And pay attention, you know, just love and respect. I think those are amazing things. But when criticism gets in there and in your own mind, I remember being married all that time, then my mind would start to get critical. And I just asked God to give me a passion for my wife, you know, same with the Bible. Give me a passion for your word. Give me a passion for prayer because I'm dry. And he does it. He's awesome. Yeah. He'll bring that passion back.
That's really good. So what about
prioritize wife first, you know, God, wife.
So So I go through a divorce. And then I get remarried and I've got my wife has children and I have children. So I've heard this speech numerous times. Well, I told my wife, my kids are more important than her. What do you say to that guy?
I would say you will not be married long. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Well, it's not funny, but that's good. I appreciate you saying that because I think that's something that guys get caught in this web of lies that's antithetical to the word of God, right? So, well, let's jump into this thing. So you, not only did you write this book, but the Daily Survival Guide for Divorced Men. I'm going to have you tell me about that in a second. But you have a podcast. Tell us a little bit about the name of the podcast and what you do there.
Our podcast is called Men's Divorce Recovery. My partner and I, Chris Espinoza, he joined me a couple of years ago. We started it almost 2 years ago. It'd be at April 2 years. And we have good response from that. We have a good, 45,000 downloads so far. But we really our goal with that podcast is to reach that guy that's just a puddle. When you're divorced, it's kind of like you have a toothache. You need that dentist. And all you think about is the dentist and getting your tooth. And then you kind of move on, you recover, you don't need us anymore. But for those guys who are really struggling, we try to make our podcast just really aimed at them to get through that crisis. Our kind of theme is survive and thrive. So first, the surviving part is the most difficult part. And right at the beginning of this process is when guys have so many options they can take, and some of them good and some of them bad. So our goal is to really bring them to a place of faith in Christ, because this is one of those crises that, men just have to be beat down by God. And this is one of those beat downs. So why not use this pain instead of waste the pain? Bring these guys into faith in Christ and then growing in their discipleship. We've had some great guests on there. I think we've mutually had Jeff Kemp as a guest on our podcast. And so it's really good. I mean, men just need that. We need men talking to other men and getting us through it. So the podcast is called Men's Divorce Recovery.
Men's Divorce Recovery. So, okay, perfect. Super easy. I appreciate that, because I know our guys are going to want to go there and check it out. So your daily survival guide for divorced men. So essentially, this is a pseudo daily devotional.
It is. It's a devotional, 91 days.
Okay, because I was in my brain, I had 191 days, but maybe that was a one. I knew it was 91, but I thought it was 190. Okay, so 91-day devotional. It's a pretty big book. It's probably, 350 pages, right? It looked pretty hefty to me when I read it, just grinding through it, because I tried to read a daily devotional in a week.
My first one was I was going to go for 180 days, and God just got me up at 4:30 every morning. I just wrote. So I sent it off to Amazon. It came back to be 750 pages long. And my wife said, no man is going to read that book. So I cut it in half down to 91. So, but you can, it's just a few pages a day.
Yeah, it's not much. It's not much. It's just, because I'm preparing for a podcast, it's a lot, because it's meant to be read in 3 months.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to save the devotional part for the men who buy the book. But for this, you had something in the front of the book I thought was really healing and healthy. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to read a quote from your book. You said this. You said, the readings are designed to carry you along a journey of healing. Note that some of the days will involve more reading than others. Hang in there and read each day completely. Nothing is more important than your recovery. So giving yourself time to the process of recovery is worthy investment. Would you like to add anything there?
Well, it is, because, at this point in a man's life, you really have some choices to make. And divorce is a unique in that it really, first of all, it's just tearing apart the social fabric that God built the social part of the universe out of. That's why even if you want a divorce, when that happens, it hurts so much, because God, I don't know how our universe is held together, gravity and that string theory or whatever. The social fabric is one man, one woman for a lifetime. So every time there's a tearing in that social fabric, it hurts. It's not going to feel good. So it hurts deeply, uniquely to men, I believe. But the journey is long and hard. I mean, I think we can recognize that men in general are not really allowed to feel and express pain in our society. And I have my limits too. I mean, we're not going to let guys just wallow in self-pity. And you talk a lot about courage. I've listened to your audiobooks and speeches, we don't want to sit there and wallow in self-pity. It just is not going to work. But when a guy's in that place, he has some choices to make. One way to just kind of describe this is, you play football, you know this, when a guy goes down on the field, 100,000 people stop what they're doing, and a team runs out on that field. I mean, and I've researched that team. There's like an orthodontist and local ER doctor and pulmonologist. It's amazing. So they run out there, and their goal is to get this guy stabilized and hopefully back in the game. Well, there's another team out on that field too. They're called the cheerleaders. And I'm sure if I was a football player down on the field, I would rather look at the cheerleaders. I'd rather them come over and say, hey, you know. But the problem with that is the cheerleaders are not going to get you better, and they're just going to get in the way of the team to get you help. So a lot of our guys that are going through divorce will turn to the cheerleaders, porn, strip club, prostitute, instead of getting the team around them. But the reality is that mostly when a guy goes down in divorce, the game just goes on and they're left without any kind of support. And so that leaves a guy in a place of intensified anger because he's really hurting and nobody is coming to help him. And there's some reasons for that
Well,
that
you
are
know
helpful to understand,
what's
but
in our.
don't,
Oh,
yeah.
sorry. I'm sorry about that. I was
No,
just I had
no.
a thought prop in my head that was just so critical. I think with us, you know, we try to get on the front end of things with the men, and so I speak with a different voice. But then when guys are struggling with a porn addiction or a divorce, we've got to have we refer them to guys who are specialized in that area, right? So that's how the body of Christ works. So your voice in the book is different than my voice in Guts and Manhood or Strong Men, Dangerous Times, right? You know, and so I really appreciate your voice and the voice of healing and the voice that comes out of personal pain. You know, God does take our brokenness and turn it into his blessing. And you're doing that with men. And so I really applaud that. I want to jump into these nine critical things to practice when healing from divorce, because we got guys driving in cars right now, so they aren't going to be able to read your devotional. They'll go get your book, and we'll refer them to that page. But you have nine things here, and I just want you to talk on these nine things, because I think they're critical to men finding healing. And I am the product of a divorce. You know, my parents divorced on my 13th birthday, so I still carry that. And I remember the pain from both sides. I remember the dating. I remember the stepbrothers and sisters. I just all of it. And so, your first thing you say here is don't make things
That's
worse.
right.
So you
Yes.
say divorce rips hearts and families apart. So when you say don't make things worse, I mean that's already pretty bad, a divorce. So talk us through what worse means in your expertise.
Well, we tell guys that you can think a lot of things, but you can't get put in jail for thinking things. But you can get put in jail for doing what you're thinking of doing. I know what I thought during this period of time. I mean, you wanted your wife dead, right? Remember, you told us all
Yeah, we weren't even
that.
divorced. We were married
Well, you
only a
may not,
year.
yes, you weren't even divorced.
Married a week.
So I think I can't remember the statistic, but I think about a quarter of all people going through divorce, there would be some sort of actual lashing out, running over mailboxes, stalking, something like that. So
Really?
again, there's one of the authors that I enjoy says that as love and marriage go together, so do divorce and anger. So you're intensely in
Whoa.
love, come together in marriage, and when that pulls apart, the anger can be really in a unique, they call it divorce anger. It's intense, and that can lead people to do crazy stuff that they never would have thought. In fact, a lot of men will say, I never knew I could think like this or feel like this, I should say. So we're always telling those guys, don't make it worse. You're probably familiar with Richard Rohr's saying, pain that's not transformed is transmitted. So men transmit pain outwardly. We see it in, mass shootings. We see it in the sexual working out as they, express themselves in bad ways sexually. But inwardly, that pain can be turned inwardly in depression and ultimately suicide. So the suicide rate, as you know, for older men is skyrocketed the last 15, 20 years. And among young teenage girls. So the idea of don't make it worse really has practical implications. You can think a lot of stuff, and eventually God's gonna work on your heart to get your thinking back in line, but just don't do them. For now, just decide, I'm not gonna do what I'm thinking I wanna do, so
Yeah, you know, it's
don't make
interesting.
it worse. Don't make it
I
worse,
got to
man.
confess, Dale. I never thought my stepfather actually committed suicide in 2012
Oh,
after
well, I remember,
33 years
yeah,
of
you said
marriage.
that.
And so that was incredibly painful. And actually, the note he left in a lot of ways implicated my mom's kids, which was really weird because we were not involved in anything. It was just really, really interesting. But I never thought about that. And he committed suicide after he assaulted my mother. So, but I never actually thought about, because I'm not divorced, and my parents, when they divorced, it was a clean divorce, I guess you could say, and it wasn't a lot of anger, and they didn't talk bad about each other. But I never realized that men consider hurting their ex-wife. I mean, I guess it makes sense, and I totally agree. I just never knew. I never thought of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an aha moment.
We think of it. Let me tell you.
No, I believe you. I just never, I never considered that before. So I appreciate that point. So guys, don't, if you're their guy, hey, you know, this too shall pass, right? I mean, so that's
in my full-time job is in a senior chaplain for Travis County Sheriff's Office. And so I'm working with about 2,200 inmates. And
yeah.
These guys are, I work with people who are accused of murder every day. I just got back from the jail and saw three people that were accused of murder. And a lot of those are relationship issues. So on the criminal end of stuff, you know, rational guys will do irrational things when they just feel this rejection and emasculation that comes along with divorce. So don't make it worse, man.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I can honestly say I've got a great marriage, but you know what? Honestly, if I were to walk in the house and see her with another guy, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I don't know if everybody would walk out of that room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can just go crazy. So that's really good. I appreciate that. So Shanna, don't worry. You're safe at this point.
Okay.
So number two, and I thought this was really powerful. You said, and I'm going to let you unpack this, invest in time with God. And then you said spending time with God will give you energy, not take it away.
Yeah, I think, you know, divorce really sucks the energy out of you. I'm 110, 125% guy. I love to go. And when all this came down with me, it's hard just to get out of bed. And God just said, look, Dale, you measure your worth for good or bad, mostly for bad, by how much you get done in a day. And he said, it's not going to happen, man. you are not going to be able to produce. But the time with God is absolutely critical. I mean, I could not have made it through without God's comfort and care for me. And so these guys are at that bottom. He is the answer. God is the answer. And as we know, when men go through these horrible times, then that's just God stripping us down. I mean, whatever that horrible time looks like for you, it could be a job loss. It could be the death of someone important in your life, the death of your wife. For us who are divorced, that's just God stripping us down, putting us in the desert. And if you just don't go to God, then you're just completely wasting this opportunity God has put in your life to reorder your priorities, come to Him and find faith in Him. But when you're exhausted, you're going, man, I can't even get out of bed. I mean, literally people going through divorces say, I can hardly make it through the day. Can't wait to get in bed. Then at night, all the thoughts come flooding in. And my personal opinion is when Satan really starts to bombard you. And then you say, I gotta get up. It's torment. But guys, you have got to just take time with God. This is when He wants to meet you in the desert. And you will not lose. No one ever died from getting up 30 minutes early and spending time with God. I promise you won't die. So take that time, invest with God. And this is your moment to really hear Him and experience His comfort of you. In the end, if you come to Christ through this and really come to know God, well, then you're going to be able to look back on that pain, that awful pain, and say, that was worth it. I mean, that hard time was definitely God's work in my life.
So you were a pastor. Yep. You are a pastor, but you were a pastor in a church at the time. So you set the pace, I guess, with your flock about investing time with God. Do you think that God, through your divorce, I'm talking about you personally, had to God's never going to cause a divorce, but do you think that God used the divorce to deconstruct some things in your life? And if yes, what were they?
That is a great question. I think my story is a little unique in that I went through two life-altering events, the stripping down at the same time. But in August of 2013, which was right before everything started, in December of 2013 with the church, I had this experience with God that I was on. I had 3 weeks vacation. I was just decompressing from pastoring the church. And I you can't really describe it. I know just God just showed up in my life in a way where it's interesting for me that Jesus was my brother. I mean, I kind of really sense this. And the best way to say this is, you know, when you're young and you're a young pastor and you say, I would die for Christ. They can take me. They can kill me. And you're just saying that out of ego. But after this experience, I was like, oh, yeah, I know why the martyrs could die for Christ, because my body's unimportant, you know, but that prepared me for all that was coming ahead of me. So, yeah, I know that through the divorce and everything, then it definitely deconstructed priorities and some things I thought were important, that were careers very important to me. And I was just like any other guy, you have an image, you want to project that image. And then once it's completely destroyed, I mean, the reputation you work hard for is in the gutter. Then that's where God really shows up, and identity is really anchored in Him alone. And after that sort of experience, you go, God got me through this. He's going to get me through everything. So that was really a great lesson that is hard earned, and I still work on it. Right, Jim? We're
Yeah.
always we or us men. We our fight is over at death.
Well, it's interesting. This is what I always have guys tell me. Oh, I'm in business. You're a Christian. There's no difference between me and you. Blah, blah, blah. I go, you know what, bro? There's so much of a difference. If you get divorced, you don't get fired.
Oh yeah.
We get fired. I mean, it's just the way it works. It's so different. I just am so, and I'm called of God to, make, $200,000 less a year than you based on my
That's
college
true.
graduate friends. So don't tell me it's the same. It's insulting to me. But here's my question, Dale. So how is your, from this deconstruction? So here's the beautiful thing about God is he deconstructs our lives, but he never does it as an end in itself, right? It's always, there's always a, it's like a means to an end. So how do you do your marriage now different than your first marriage? In other words, what did you learn from the 32 years of your first wife that from the failure of that marriage to now, what are you implementing differently? Because you're older now, your kids are out of the house, I'm assuming. You're not in that stress bubble, but you're in another marriage, and marriage is marriage. So what are some things that you've learned that you can pass on to our guys?
Well, I think that, when you get divorced after a long marriage, then now you can kind of you have more wisdom as to your choices. When you're young, you're choosing out of perhaps some needs that you can think through and think, okay, how can I be more independent and not be codependent on somebody or whatever that issue is? And so, I was able to choose someone who was similar. She's 5 years younger than me, but we have the same interests, the same goals, the same values, but mostly just affection and love for each other that is really working. I would say that personality, in my experience, seems to over or trump a lot of other factors. I'm not sure that people grow in their faith as much as their personality really seems to dominate, especially when you go through stress and you kind of drop down to a baseline. That personality is going to come through. So matching someone that is your personality is, I think, really important. And I'm not sure that always happens early on when people are choosing young, but I'm totally for getting married young. That's what God tells us to do. We're supposed to marry and have kids. Goes back
Yeah,
to the
that's really
Genesis.
interesting because my wife and I shared all the same values, which really has Jesus is the most important one, but that really got us through. But our personalities are probably too similar, to be, if I'm being honest. We've had a lot of clashing because we're too similar, but our values overrode our personalities. And I think that's really critical for these people who get married. Hey, do we share the same values? And most importantly, do we sell the same, share the same value of Jesus? And so I think that's important. So you talked about your energy loss. You talked about not being able to get up in the morning. And you wrote here your number three on your tips to finding healing is lower your expectations of what you can accomplish. So can you walk us through what that means?
Well, that's just what I said earlier is
Yeah.
that, I run at a pace, and unfortunately, I would measure my worth by how much I got done. If I have a day when I never have a day I don't get stuff done, but if I have a day where I don't get enough done, then I'm like, oh man, I'm, it's not a godly thing, it's just the way I'm built. But in that period when my own when this drawdown of energy happened, God just said, you're not going to be able to run at 100%. It's like 30%. And so the expectations for a guy going through divorce should just be survival and not making it worse. Like we come back because you're tempted to invest your energy and time and money into things that are going to be relief, pain, bring relief to your pain. And those are things that are self-destructive. So if you just ramp it back and say, hey, I can go slow during this time. I'm probably not going to get employee of the year at this time. When I go to work, I'm going to leave it in the car. I'm going to step into my home office and it's going to be the office. It's not going to be all my personal problems. You just have to slow things down and and really lower those expectations about what you're going to accomplish during this period of time.
So that brings me up. That brings up a point to me. So I went through a real painful divorce with a church. I
Yeah,
think we
see,
all
I've
have,
been
right?
there.
So I mean,
Yes.
so I've remained married to my bride, praise the Lord. But there was a painful church breakup type of thing, and I've only been in two churches, and this was a very painful one for me. But I found that a lot of the same on a much lesser level than a divorce of a marriage, you know. But I found the same things you're talking about. I thought really negative thoughts. You know, I mean, like I said some horrible things out loud about things and people, having to lean really hard into Jesus. But this third one here, you said lowering expectations of what to accomplish. And you said that you are a task-oriented guy, but you lack the energy, right? So you have to lower the expectations. Do you think, I know for me personally, during that season, I wasn't able to accomplish as much. I didn't have the energy or drive. But I used that season in that desert, as you called it. Some would call it the valley. Do you think that lowering your expectations there is also a pull by the Holy Spirit into deeper and authentic relationships with people who really care about you? Did you see that counteracting or your lack of ability to perform at the highest level?
That's a great, really what you're bringing up is who is going to be there for you.
Yeah.
And the reality is that divorced guys are going to be alone. I was so angry at the lack of people who reached out to me. So I was pastoring a church of about 500 people. If I had gone on Facebook and said, "Hey, I've got a terminal diagnosis of cancer, or just a cancer," I would have had hundreds of people reaching out. When this happened, nothing. And I literally spent Christmas Day of 2015 in the parsonage of the church I was going to be leaving. And at the end of the week, I spent that Christmas Day alone. And honestly, I was not unhappy with that. I was so sick of people and so angry. This was 3 months or 2.5 months after she had left. But th there's a reason that guys are going to go it alone, because death and divorce are really different. When someone dies, one thing, it's a short event. Everybody knows what to do. You reach out, you send flowers, you go to service, you might call them, whatever, and it's over and done. That person's not going to come back to life and mess things up. But with divorce, they don't know whether to congratulate you or console you. So friends and family are going to draw back because they just don't know what to do. And that's where my book comes in, because you can go up to someone who's going through divorce and say, "Hey, you're going through divorce. I know this is painful. Maybe this could help." But don't expect people to reach out to you and say, "Hey, I know you're going through divorce. Let me help you," like they would if you had a health crisis. This is a real problem, because those guys, when they're really hurting, feel abandoned, and there is a good reason for that. Guy, people just don't know what to do. The few that do really reach out, you will remember them for your lifetime. And if you know someone who's going through divorce, take the plunge, man. Reach out to them. You're jumping into a messy situation that's not going to be over and done like a death is. You may be walking with this guy for a year or 2 years. This guy's quite going to lash out at you. The few people who did even reach out to me, well, then I was so angry and hurt that I was like a cornered animal. Instead of welcoming the help, sometimes I'd lash out at them. But you just got to be patient with these guys, because they really are in a lot of pain, and they need help though.
Well, another problem with divorce is this is just quintessential to divorce. Whenever there's a divorce, there's instant side choosing. So
Absolutely.
people don't say, "Well, I'm just going to be right in the middle here." We choose sides. It's just the way it is. And then they just choose sides, or they just freeze up and say nothing. And you're saying lean in. I noticed on your list of nine, you didn't talk about any. You talk about relationship to your children, which is next, but not other people. That's why when you said the lack of energy, I thought, well, that's got to be, there's something's got to happen there, and it's got to be relational. You know what I'm saying? There's got to be some kind of relational component where we lean into people very heavily.
Well, the guys that, like I go back to the guy in the down on the football field, face down on the turf, and then in divorce, no one runs out onto the field, and the game just goes on. And you're going, "Hey, man, I'm down on the turf. I would like some help here." No, they're cheerleaders, right? They're always there. Porn's
Yeah.
always there. Strip clubs, prostitutes. What we advocate the guys do, and in the work that we do with guys, is we say you've got to build your team. Right now, or for I
Yeah.
should say, for 50 years, we've had this amazing infrastructure ready for anybody going into a physical crisis. You dial 911, and literally, there's millions of dollars, and all these people have actually dedicated their lives to instantly coming and getting you back in the game physically. The fact that we just got 988 tells you that we're a little behind on the soul crushed infrastructure. So we tell the guys, if you fell down with a heart attack, man, there'd be all kinds of people helping you. When you come through this heart attack, you have to build your own team. So that team consists of a good one or two good friends, no more than that. A pastor, a men's ministry leader, a lawyer, a medical doctor, financial counselor, therapist. So you actually have to do that work. And so this really puts the burden on us as churches to realize that we have to really step in with these guys and be interventive with them and really take the lead, because they're probably not going to do that. It's hard enough to build a team. If I have a frustration from the guys that reach out to us, they'll say, I need some help. So I've reached out to churches in the local area and said, hey, will you reach out to this guy? It's as if he is having a physical heart attack. He needs help now. And honestly, I've been surprised at the lack of response to that 911 call, to churches. So
Well,
divorce guys really do need you to jump in there with them. It's hard, but they need it.
I just added a 10th thing. That was so powerful. I just added it.
Oh, good. Okay.
No, I mean, really, I mean, that was very profound what you said, that we don't think about that because we're, as guys, our default is isolation, right? You know,
Absolutely, yep.
especially if the guy had committed adultery or he's clearly visibly at fault, so we isolate. Right. And so in your case, there was no real immoral behavior, but you divorce and people isolated you because you're the pastor. There was probably a whole pastoral thing because people don't know how to handle that. And which is another reason why we're different than guys in the workforce.
That's true.
I think building your team, say, okay, I'm divorced now. I need to build a team. And the goal of the team is not to make me my team think that I'm right and my ex-wife is wrong, but I need to build a team because I need healing. I'm devastated. I'm, as what'd you say, lying in a puddle right now. I'm down. I'm man down. And so I really, that is very profound. And you had some really interesting players on the team. Doctor, lawyer, was that literal? Like get a get,
We
okay.
say definitely you need, we always say go to your pastor and,
Yeah.
or a find a pastor. Most guys don't have, here's some churches in your area. Get one or two good friends. You don't need more than that. Get a men's ministry leader. I mean, you guys are awesome at doing this. And then the therapist, counselor. I mean, these days, what can you say? But you really need to try. And then and a lawyer. You need a lawyer, not to screw your ex-wife out of money, but just to make it fair and to protect yourself. And then financial advisor, they're divorce coaches just for divorce people. And then the medical doctor, I think if you're struggling, then just check in with your doctor and say,
Yeah.
hey, I mean, we're not big on medication. We think more talk is better than
Agree
chemicals
100%.
usually, but there's a place for that.
I agree with that 100%, but I also agree with that statement as well. So, part of your team, and we haven't brought them into this narrative, but we're doing it right now. Part of your team is your kids. So, how old were your children? And point five here is investing in your children. So how old are your kids when you guys got divorced, and how does a guy navigate these murky waters when children think dad's to blame, mom's to blame, because sometimes the kids won't want to talk to dad. A lot of dynamics here. So how old were your children, and then how did you invest in them, and what do you mean there?
My kids were about, let me think, about 25, 23, and 14.
So you had one in the home.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a long story. I won't go into that.
But I mean, that's tricky though,
That's
right?
I had really worked with my son and was kind of raising him, and so that really hurt the most. That hurt the most. I can't, this kid went through so much. He went from his dad being a pastor in New England church to all of a sudden we have to move to Texas. We don't know where we're going to go. And all of a sudden mom's moving out with me, and while he's gone on a trip. I was not happy with that. But the thing to remember for guys going through divorce and anybody going through divorce is the kids never win. You might win. You might say, I have a new partner. I can date again. I can have fun again, whatever you want to say, or at least I'm relieved of this stress. But for the kid looks at it and goes, there's nothing good about this, unless there's just terrible abuse and violence. So they need so much love and they need so much care and just welcoming them. This is a time to really step up and be that dad who is as honest as you can be, depending on the age of the kids, what's going on. But the assurance, invest in them that they will always have you, because this is the foundation. Even adult children of divorced parents, if you're out of the house, you're independent. Adult kids still think of their parents as a safety net. They're like, oh, I got mom and dad, especially these days. When that breaks apart, then deep inside they're going, wow, my safety net is torn. So it affects surprisingly adult children very much as well. But for me, it was definitely assuring, especially my youngest son, because he was, in the middle of all this. Just, I'm always going to be here for you. And you go through the, it's not your fault, that kind of thing. The speech you gave, which you said, oh my gosh, but it impacted you so much. But the kids, if adults have such a hard time articulating our emotions, to get what we need, then kids just are, they don't have any ability whatsoever. And I'll ask, as a pastor, I'd ask these, adult divorcing parents, well, how are your kids doing? Oh, they're fine. Well, how do you know? Well, they're just going on with life. I said, dude, if you cannot state how you are doing actually honestly, how do you expect a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old to express this? So, because the divorce focuses the adults on each other, and they start making childish decisions, expecting their children to make adult decisions. I've literally told couples when I was a pastor before I was divorced, saying, you guys need to start being the adults in the room and let your kids be the kids, because it rocks their world. And a lot of times, I used to say, well, how's it going to work out? Well, they're going to be 1 week at 1 week at with her and 1 week with me. I said, well, how would you like to live like that? I just think it's the children that really makes me angry when it comes to divorce, because the divorce is preventable and the children are the ones who really suffer. So you have got to push aside your own feelings and invest in your kids. And you can't talk about your spouse or soon to be ex-wife, whatever. It has to be for them. And my now wife, Kelly, she is about 5 years ahead of me in the divorce journey. And she said, you will learn how to develop an individual relationship with them. Because up to that point, right, it's a relationship with you and your wife. Now, after divorce, it has to be an individual relationship. And that really helped me say, okay, I've got to go build this relationship with my sons and my daughter. And that's challenging, but that was really good advice. My wife is way smarter than me. She's
Thank
amazing.
God for those women.
So,
Yep. Well,
amen,
and then,
brother.
50%, I don't know if the statistics changed, Dale, but last I read, 50% of children of divorce won't see their dad for an entire year. So the best thing that dad can do is be there, show up.
Unbelievable,
You know,
man.
I mean, I think negative thoughts when I read that statistic, because that's the one thing a dad can control. And so that's really so okay. So you go on here and you say, hey guys, and you've already alluded to this. I'm just going to read it out loud and kind of move on a little bit. You said you must keep working, so think about what you must do to at work to get by. So you talked about that already. Hey, keep going to work, stay in your rhythm. Is there anything you want to add there?
Well, I think you have to have a job. So, when you're exhausted and angry, you have really just got to leave that behind and focus on getting, you're not going to be the employee of the year or whatever. Just get done what you have to get done and get the support that you need to get that done. So it's important that you not lose your job too. You don't want to compound problems here. Don't make it worse. Losing your job would definitely make it worse.
And then we've already talked about in building your team. This would probably be building your team. But you said invest in concentrated energy on legal and financial aspects of divorce. And so you've already kind of highlighted that, which I thought that's really practical and that's pragmatic. And so we don't think about that when we're devastated. So the 8 and 9, I'm going to put these together because these
Sounds
are two of the five mantras that I'm living by this year for my body. So you talk about exercise and sleep. Why are those so critical to finding healing after divorce?
Well, I'm a huge I was an athlete, earlier, and have just had a I'm just not fanatical about working out, but this is the house you're given on earth. This is the one you don't get to trade this one in. And so keeping this in shape is really just our God-given responsibility to do that, to live long and as long and strong as God would have us on the planet. But this is going to be very physically damaging, the divorce going through that. So you really just want to get out and exercise. I remember I had a guy in Florida. He was really overweight. He was struggling, and he'd read my book. And my book, the day is titled "Get Moving." The particular day that this, he said, "I started doing that, Dale, and I could hardly walk half a mile, and now I'm walking a mile and 2 miles." And he started to jog, and he felt so much better. And honestly, if you are thinking about getting remarried, women
You got to get your
want
div I
someone
call
who's at least in decent shape. You do not have to be the rock, but
Yep.
if you're the blimp,
Well, I'd call it the divorce body, right? You better get into
yeah.
shape because you're out on the market whether you like it or not, So
Yep.
sleep and exercise, and I think sleep in our country is like the redheaded stepchild. That's probably a bad joke at a divorce podcast, but it's the redheaded stepchild of our country. Like we pride ourselves in not sleeping. And I hear guys bragging about their 4 hours a night. I only need five. I go, well, that's not true in any world that you only need 5 hours of sleep. You need to sleep, bro.
You need to sleep, and it's hard when you're going through divorce because at night, this is when all the thoughts really come in, when
Oh,
the
yeah.
distractions are gone, you're silent in your head. And this is where you just have to get up with God so that God can reset your north, put you back, because you're going to get hit with all these thoughts. And for me, I would wake up with just all this thinking, and God just say, "This, I'm your true north, man. You got to look back to me
Yeah,
and
true
get
north.
reoriented."
No,
It'll get better as
I
time
love
goes
that.
by.
We need to get reoriented. And a lot of times a divorce revolves around a man not being oriented. And he needs
That's
that.
so
That's where
true.
that deconstruction comes in, and God building that guy up again. And you even shared in your story that there was part of that where you were disoriented and God had to reorient. So I appreciate the authenticity there. So you talk about we live in a world that we tend to throw drugs at everything. I mean, I have never experienced so many people who are medicated. I do believe that some people truly need that. I do believe there are seasons for that, but we seem to be medicating for everything nowadays. And so, number 10, you said don't waste your energy or money on anxiety, drugs, alcohol, pornography, buying stuff, or my personal favorite, escaping to the Caribbean. So what are you talking about there?
Well, I mean, truly, when we're in pain, well, I guess you could say our society doesn't have what I call a theology of pain. No one
Yeah.
teaches us what pain is for, how it can be redeemed. Every other society up to the history of in the history of the world up to yesterday in America, a Western, did that for us. Well, if it was wrong or right, then, but so we medicate it, we litigate it. These are our answers to pain, and clearly, drugs and alcohol are immediate, you could say trustworthy, predictable sources of pain relief. But this isn't, where God meets us. I know there's a place for, prescription medications, but honestly, if starting with Prozac in the 1980s, the promise that we would be undepressed if we took this, I think if the pharmaceutical industry promised us a medication for a certain disease, and after using it for 40 years, the disease is worse, then medications eradicate disease. They don't actually. So I think there's a lot of issues around that. So, there's definitely a place for medication, and I see it working in my work at the jail and all that kind of stuff. But start with the basic stuff. Move, sleep, eat well, get some friends. Start with that, with the things that God has given us to before we had all these pharmaceuticals to get pain relief. And again, there's definitely a place, there's a medical doctor who can come in, but all these other things on this list are just ways to alleviate pain. And especially when it comes to pornography, man, or a divorce guy is a prime target.
Oh, heck
You
yeah.
have been neutered, you have been emasculated, you're angry at woman. There's nothing easier than jumping in there with porn, because now you can get mad at woman and you can prove your masculinity in a sort of weird, bizarre, pseudo sort of way. Everyone I've talked to says, I struggle with pornography.
And she never says no. She
She never
she
says
always
no. She's
accepts you and
always
never
there.
talks back. No, that's really interesting. So I don't know why, but for me, pain is a sign of life. Like when I'm hurting, it tells me
That's
I'm
true,
alive.
yeah.
So I tend to be a guy who embraces it because, well, I know I'm alive because my back is killing me right now and I got to go work out. So I'm going, okay, I got to go work out, but how do I do this? Well, I know I'm alive and I know my back is talking to me loud and clear, and I think that when we medicate or when we do some of the pornography is a demented type of medication that we're not taking the pain, so to speak. We're finding a different outlet. So have
And you talk
one.
about courage. Your
Yeah.
thing on courage, you talk about it. I love it because it's not something that is a through the spirit, a spiritual gift. It is something that you can get if you reach out and take it. Well, this is the moment, guys, when you have to reach. You're not going to feel like it to get back in the game, to for an NFL player to get off on the turf and get back in. It takes amazing courage. Think of DeMar Hamlin coming back on the field after going completely out on the field. This is where the great stories are made. So one of the second thing we tell guys, we tell them, don't make it worse. We say also immediately, we say, determine now that you're going to finish well, or as you would say, finish strong, not wrong, because
Yes.
that goal will determine the decisions you make. I say, do you want your when you die, do you want a saying about you? Well, he was an angry old bitter man that lived in a one bedroom apartment, drunk and porning, or do you want us to say you are a guy who went through a hard time? And you found God, and through your courage and God's grace, you became an amazing man. The second half of your life is better than the first. So.
That's really interesting, the point you brought up. So I'm actually taking a group of men through my series, this four-part series through Guts and Manhood. And so last night was Courage is a Choice. And one of the things I noticed with divorce is a lot of choice is removed from a man. He loses a lot of the power to choose. So does she. But what you can choose is you can choose courage. You can choose to engage with your kids. You can choose a healthy body. There are certain things you can choose, so leverage those. So I
Absolutely.
do want to I want to throw you a curveball at the end. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready, man.
Okay, one last question. So one of the things a man is going to choose is when to date and who.
Okay.
So this is in your book, and you didn't cover it in the devotional, but you mentioned it. And so I want to talk to those guys going through divorce. What, give us some wisdom on pragmatic wisdom on when to date, who to date. Like what do you what is your view on dating post-divorce?
Well, for you guys going through divorce, I want to say that the market is very much in your favor right now. That if you are a good guy, there are many, many women who are looking for a good guy. They are not looking for somebody else to take care of. They've taken care of their children. They probably took care of their husband who was a child. They do not want to, they don't want to be a nurse or a purse. So you need to step up the plate here. And really, I hear the stories of
Oh,
women
yeah.
who go on these dates and
Nurse
they,
or purse?
Trim your ear hair, get the nose hair fixed up, look good, pay,
You're on
be
the
chivalrous,
market,
open
bro.
the
Yeah.
you get on the
Yeah.
market. And but the good news, there is a great market for that. Women are desperately wanting somebody good, but they're not willing to throw their lives on somebody that's going to just be another drain on them. So they're looking for a partner and a mature partner. You have a job and that kind of thing. But as far as timing on dating, we go through this with these guys. They will date too fast. And then you are dealing with two heartbreaks, your divorce, and now this second rejection. And that is a really sucky place to be. So just take time. And I'm always saying, God will bring somebody into your life if he wants you to remarry. And if you'll know when that is, and we'll help you figure that out. But man, that second marriage can be amazing. Just take your time. There's two times to go slow: when you're thinking about getting married and when you think about getting divorced. Either one of those huge decisions, nothing, no, those things don't have to happen fast. So, but boy, I'm super happily remarried. God just really brought this amazing woman into my life, so that's awesome. But you got to be careful about that. Let God make those
Well, and I
decisions.
would add too, because I'm talking to a Christian audience, or at least guys that say they're Christians, the statistics of men who live with women outside the church and inside the church are the same. And I'll tell these men this: if, hey, dating and sex are different. Sex is for marriage. Dating is not. So if even in the, don't rush into a relationship because you want to have sex, because if you're wanting to honor God, sex is off the table. So yeah, that absolutely. That's not something that's only meant for marriage. So when we're talking about dating here, Dale and I are talking about dating with the context to marry someone, not getting out there and Netflix and chill.
It's like, well, I can tell you that my wife, Kelly, she said we are on a third date, and I just stopped her and said, you know, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm not going to do the sex thing. That's not what I'm in here for. And she said, you got me right there.
Let's get married.
Yeah.
Hey, I do want to say, man, this book I think is going to bring a lot of health and healing. I think your podcast is doing the same. How do these guys, do you have a website? I'm assuming they can find your book on Amazon. Again, the title of that book is, let me find that title. It is Daily Survival Guide for Divorced Men. So where's the best place to pick it up, and how do they reach you and your ministry and what it has to offer?
The book is available on Amazon, on Apple, electronic and paper and all that kind of stuff. And then our website is just mensdivorcerecovery.org. Super simple, super easy. And we offer a video series, 10-part video series, and Zoom groups, just you can check it out there. But we really want guys to go through this thing. We want to be that team on the field to rescue them. Like I had the three people who rescued me. Without them, I don't know, man. I don't think I'd be talking to you right now.
So this video series, is this something that a pastor listening or a men's ministry leader can buy for their group at church?
They can't at this point. I mean, I guess they could, and then watch it together. We're not built out like a major organization. So it's really designed for a guy to go through that 10 steps. I have a little 10 part workbook that sort of goes along with that. And, basically parallels that. So,
man, well, that's
the 10 most important things, kind of just what we went through.
Yeah, actually. No, that's so good, man. I appreciate this. We've had 700 podcast episodes, and you're the first guy I found that dealt with recovery from divorce. So I think you got a really unique ministry opportunity. I'm really pleased that we were able to get you on the show. So Dale, thanks so much for getting on here and sharing from your own personal heartbreak and how God has redeemed that heartbreak. And man, God bless you. And I hope God continues to pour it on over your ministry, man.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much. It's been awesome.
Yep. God bless. Hey guys, our man laws are supplied by you, our listeners, most of the time. Hey, and if we use yours, guys, we want to send you some swag just to say thank you. Hey, this is man law number 85, and it says this: always leave an open urinal, movie seat, or car seat when going to the bathroom, movie, or you're in your truck or car. That is a no-brainer, guys. The life rule here is this: when it comes to your bros, do life side by side. When it comes to your wife, do life face to face. Hey guys, if you like this episode, make sure you text the link to one of your buddies who could be benefited. Maybe he's struggling with a divorce or he's going through separation. Man, make sure you help him out, guys. Until next time, feel the wet sand on the arena floor. Hear the deafening roar of the crowd. Taste the sweetness of victory. Smell the stench of battle. Get in the game. Get dirty. Grind it out and be a man.